All right, thanks for everyone's patience. Always a last-minute scramble before we do markup of a finance and policy bill. So I appreciate everyone being patient. So welcome everyone to the Transportation Committee hearing of the Minnesota Senate. Today is Wednesday, April 9th, 2025. The time is 3:17 p.m. We are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. And in accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following member will be participating remotely in today's hearing, Senator Carlson from Eagan. A quorum is present. So members, we just have one matter before us today, and that's Senate File 2082, the Transportation Omnibus Bill, which was rolled out 2 days ago. So today, we have the opportunity to hear from the public on their perspectives and their ideas on the bill in front of us as proposed, and then we will conclude that part of the hearing and have a discussion amongst the committee on the bill and entertain possible amendments. We have a number of technical amendments, but I think I've decided that we're going to offer those after we hear testimony, because we're still sorting out some of the technicalities of the technical amendments. So we'll have those at the outset, and then we'll go to member amendments. So we're going to go right into testimony. And first up, we have our Commissioner of Transportation, Commissioner Nancy Dobenberger, with us. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Nancy Dobenberger, and I'm the commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on Senate File 2082. I appreciate the work you and other committee members and staff have done over the course of the session to assemble the legislation. The bill provides important investments to help construct, operate, and maintain Minnesota's transportation system in challenging times. And on behalf of MnDOT, I am very grateful you included so many of MnDOT's initiatives in the omnibus bill. By including operating adjustments, MnDOT will be able to manage rising costs while maintaining the high level of services that Minnesotans have come to expect. Additional funding for state road construction and the Blatnik Bridge project will result in a greatly improved transportation system, better pavements, and safer bridges. Investments in corridor planning will allow us to develop long-term visions for trunk highway corridors, while facility support means truck stations around the state can continue providing critical maintenance activities. Authorizing a funding partnership with the Metropolitan Council on the F Line and Highway 65 project will allow MnDOT to make numerous safety improvements in that corridor. Not only would this approach minimize disruption to communities and the traveling public, but the project design, communication, and construction will be significantly more efficient than building two separate projects. There are just a few items I'd like to highlight as our concerns. First, MnDOT appreciates the inclusion of $100 million in trunk highway bonding for state road construction in addition to the governor's proposal to increase base state funding by $60 million per year. And MnDOT shares your commitment to increasing transparency in transportation funding. However, redirecting calculated efficiency savings to corridors of commerce effectively reduces the existing state road construction program by about $90 million per year. It is also important to consider that about $15 million per year of the efficiencies comes from operations and maintenance. So this initiative would indirectly shift funding from operations and maintenance to state road construction. MnDOT looks forward to continued discussions about efficiency savings and how to maximize transparency. On the canceling of the match dollars for the Northern Lights Express passenger project, MnDOT is working with the Federal Railroad Administration and BNSF Railway on developing the project, and we continue to implement the corridor identification and development grant funding. We have applied for FRA's Federal State Partnership for Intercity Passenger Rail Grant Program, which would provide the 80% federal funds needed to advance the NLX project to construction. We anticipate that FRA will announce funding decisions this spring. We appreciate the significant winnowing down of the number of policy advisory committees that would be required on our projects. Since this language and other provisions related to project development have changed significantly, we provided a comprehensive list of comments in a separate document. This legislation does not include any adjustments to aircraft registration rates. Along with a modification to airline flight property tax, these investments would allow us to provide more airport development grants for Minnesota's 133 public airports. And not including Metropolitan Airports Commission airports, which also have funding needs, we estimate that $1.15 billion is needed by 2030 to maintain and expand our system of airports. Again, thank you for allowing me to share this input and all the work that you've done to get to an omnibus transportation bill that includes many of our department priorities. I look forward to continuing to work with you so we can finalize a bill that maximizes the health of people, the environment, and our economy for Minnesota's multimodal transportation system. And I stand for comments. Questions?
Thank you, Commissioner. And just let me express my appreciation to you and your entire team for being fully available to us as we are putting together this proposal. Your responsiveness and the good information you provide is always very, very much appreciated. Questions for the commissioner members? All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, I'd like to invite Cassandra O'Hearn, who's the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety, forward.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Dibble and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cassandra O'Hearn. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the budget and policy provisions of Senate File 2082. We recognize this committee is faced with the difficult task of setting a budget in the midst of a challenging budget outlook. We appreciate all the work that this committee has put into this bill to pull it together and has included significant investments in public safety. Top priority for the department was our operating adjustment. It paid salaries, rent, IT costs, and was proposed as a measured request. And thank you for including the full governor's recommended operating adjustment for DPS. This measured operating adjustment will assist DPS in addressing cost pressures. For the State Patrol, we want to thank you for the investments in this bill for recruiting and retention of state troopers that will maintain the quality workforce that's also reflective of those that we serve. We'd like to see this committee reconsider the inclusion of an initiative to require the same penalties for all dangerous speeders by adding additional consequences for driving more than 35 miles per hour over the posted speed limit. We are also hopeful that this committee will consider including funding for a new State Patrol headquarters in its final bill. This headquarters is desperately needed to create one centralized space and better serve the public. For DVS, we thank you for including the no-fee transactions recommended in the governor's budget. DPS has always maintained that our deputy registrar's partners are critical to serving customers and that they should be paid for the work that they do. And this initiative does exactly that. Requiring the removal of a license plate at the time of transfer will also provide our deputy registrar partners with additional income and also reduce the nuisance of tickets and tolls going to prior owners. The inclusion of rulemaking authority for the ignition interlock program will allow DVS to begin the work of putting requirements for both ignition interlock participants and manufacturers through the rigorous and transparent rulemaking process. Putting these requirements in rule will serve public safety by establishing clear and enforceable requirements. However, we are concerned with the changes in the bill to the exam appointment availability. This is a customization to MnDrive. Customization, if you'll recall, for many years was we were told not to customize because that isn't a best practice. It isn't, and quite frankly, right now, there's not a problem with exam turnaround. With the investments made by this committee in the past into DVS with additional examiners, DVS is fully staffed and finally seeing the desired results from those additional investments. Every week for the past few months, at any given time, there are thousands of appointments available across the state within 30 days and often within less than 14 days, even in the metropolitan area. Putting new appointment restrictions into law now will have the impact of actually decreasing exam appointment availability, just at the time when we're finally seeing the significant and sustained improvement in this area. For the Office of Traffic Safety, we thank you for including the safety planning and administration match to allow the office to fully utilize all available funds and provide long-term stability for the office. We are also appreciative of the changes, including for the Advisory Council to Traffic Safety. This will allow the council to continue to support traffic safety initiatives across the state. In addition, the changes to lane filtering included in this bill will minimize the risks to motorcyclists and vehicles. And finally, I am hoping this committee will include the agency-wide grant administration authority recommended by the governor. A critical part of administering grants is having resources for the agency to complete the critical oversight functions necessary to combat fraud and misuse of public funds. Reliable grant administration funding ensures stable and adequate funding for the cost to implement the controls to protect grant investments and tax dollars. Thank you again for the opportunity to provide these comments on this bill. We look forward to continuing to work with the committee, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. O'Hearn. Let me also echo my gratitude to you and the commissioner and your team for always being available at the end of a phone or a text or an email. Very responsive, very creative as we work through and put together a big and complicated bill. Questions, members? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy Commissioner. So I'd like to invite Judge Shetnin, who is at the Met Council and heads up their government affairs function. Welcome, Mr. Shetnin.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify here. I want to start with a thank you. I appreciate the committee including a number of our initiatives in this bill, the first being the sales tax loan that Commissioner Dobenberger mentioned in her comments, and we're very appreciative of the committee including that provision. Also, the free fares for Metro Mobility certified users on our regular route transit system, that is very much appreciated as well. I'd like to thank Senator Paugh for her bill that was included here that allows us to align our statutory procurement laws with those that are already provided to the state, and then also to Senator Johnson Stewart for our transportation reporting streamlining bill. We think all of those will allow us to be able to provide the legislature with the most up-to-date and relevant information as we move forward and continue to provide regional transit to the to our region. So we also have a letter from Chair Zelli for the committee members, but with that, I'll wrap up my comments and just want to say my thanks again for including all those provisions.
And thank you very much. Also, thank you as well for the legislative proposals and, of course, being very responsive to us and our members and our staff as we put together this bill. Questions, members, for the Met Council, Metro Transit? Thank you, Mr. Shetnin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And now I'll invite Steve Huser forward from the City of Minneapolis. Welcome, Mr. Huser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Huser. I'm a senior government relations representative for the City of Minneapolis. I want to start by thanking the chair and members of the committee for the work that you've put into putting this bill together this session. The City of Minneapolis appreciates the inclusion of funding for cities of the first class for traffic calming infrastructure improvements. It's our hope that this collaboration with our state partners will lead to our shared goal of safer streets for everyone who uses them. Improvements will be focused on high-injury streets with an additional focus on neighborhood livability. The city also appreciates the transportation advancement account funding levels that are maintained at their current allocation levels in this bill. The City of Minneapolis also supports the intent of the provisions related to MSA design standards, which would allow for more flexibility and local control on the MSA system. It's our position that more discussion would be good related to the provision that repeals the design standards and state rules. We appreciate the opportunities that we have had to collaborate with the author on the other technical aspects of that legislation. We will continue to work with the author and the committee on our shared effort to promote context-sensitive solutions, recognize different local community needs across the state, and address safety and accessibility for all modes of transportation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Huser? Thank you, Mr. Huser. All right, so those are the folks that we have who are representing officialdom, if you will. So we weren't quite as stringent on the time because they're of course representing a much larger cohort. So now we will transition to citizen and organizational testimony, and so we'll start with Eric Mishy, as well as MJ Weiss Blair, to step forward and testify on the Washington Avenue Bridge matter. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record. We're going to try to keep everyone to a couple of minutes each, because then we need to move into debate and amendments, and hopefully we won't have to come back on Thursday. Thank you. So welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The committee, my name is Eric Mishy. I'm the CEO of Save Suicide Awareness, Voices of Education, a 36-year-old Minnesota-based national nonprofit focusing on suicide prevention. I'm here representing our organization, letting you know that we are very grateful for including in this bill $15 million for permanent and temporary barriers on the Washington Avenue Bridge. This is an extraordinary investment in saving lives. We know that physical barriers on bridges help to interrupt suicidal impulsivity, which in turn helps us to save lives on these structures. We know that there is also going to be a need to invest in temporary barriers while permanent barriers are installed on this location. So the inclusion of language in this omnibus bill to address that is an enormously important addition. Just this week, I met with a parent who lost their child to another bridge in this state about 10 years ago. At that time, there were not barriers on that bridge. Yet the community around that bridge was well aware of the risks inherent in that structure and came together and demanded that policymakers install barriers on that bridge when it was reconstructed. The net result has been virtually no deaths to suicide as a result of the addition of those barriers. At the end of the day, it wasn't a nonprofit or government that came forward to solve the problem at that location any more than it was nonprofit or government that came forward to solve the problem at the Washington Avenue Bridge. It was individuals like MJ Weiss and others who came forward and said, we need to do something to save lives here. And it was leaders like University of Minnesota President Rebecca Cunningham, Senator Dietzick, and Senator Dibble who heard those voices and took action. It's now our collective obligation to take action to solve this problem, and this bill, with the addition of that language, does exactly that. By doing so, it honors the courage and sacrifices of others who've stood before this committee and other committees over the past year and a half and called for a solution to this problem. Thank you for your leadership and choosing to help save lives.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for allowing me to testify today, Chair Dibble and members of the committee. For the record, my name is MJ Weiss Blair, and I am Kayla's mom. Thank you for including the funding for suicide deterrent barriers on the Washington Avenue Bridge in this bill. I deeply appreciate that you've heard my daughter Kayla's voice in the testimony I offered last week, a couple weeks ago, and the testimony I've offered all year. The testimony I am committed to making over and over and over again until we get this problem fixed. Since I have lost Kayla nearly 17 months ago, I've made it my mission to be her voice and the voice of so many others who have taken their lives at this location over the past 50 years. Thank you for hearing me and for hearing them. Thank you for standing up and standing firm for fixing the problem that will save lives. I also want to say a thank you to University of Minnesota President Rebecca Cunningham, who had the courage to try to end this tragedy, needless tragedy, as soon as she had the power to do so. And thank you, Senator Dietzick and Senator Dibble, for taking up this cause and for giving voice to hundreds of families who have lost their loved ones at this location over the past 50 years. I want to say thank you to my friends at SAVE, Suicide Awareness, Voices of Education, who have walked with me through this maze called the legislative process. And I want to say thank you to Kayla's HOPE, which stands for Helping Others, Protecting Everyone. They have given their heart, their soul, their time, and their resources to bring darkness into light. We cannot solve problems we cannot see. We cannot solve problems we cannot speak about. We cannot save lives if we choose to choose dogma over action. Action is what was needed for 50 years. Action is what has gotten us to this moment. This moment has taken far too long. It's time to seize this moment, pass the spell, and make Kayla's hope a reality for all families in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your tireless advocacy, and thank you very much for remembering Senator Dietzick, who was very special, and this was very, very important to her. So we will honor her memory and her legacy when we do this as well. So thank you. Any questions, members? All right. So I'll invite Paul Austin forward, and I'm just going to call like two at a time forward so we can minimize transition times. So after Paul Austin is Pat Benner.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Austin. I'm with the Minnesota Safety Council. It's a 97-year-old member-based nonprofit that promotes safety in the workplace, on the roadway, and at home. We are here to voice our support and thank you for your support for traffic safety measures that are in this bill. In many ways, a transportation bill in total is about traffic safety. Good pavement, good bridges, good roadways all lead to good traffic safety, but there are some specifics in this bill that we'd especially like to point out. The support for the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety is critical to keeping collaborative and coalition efforts going. The work with the drug recognition experts and evaluators training and equipping is also critical as we move forward. More and more drivers on our roads are impaired, and that is a high risk. And we also support the ongoing funding for the Traffic Safety Data Analytics Center. Again, data helps us target where we can go to work and try to save lives. So thank you. On a given day, driving is now tied for number one with the most dangerous things we do. In the next 5 days, there will be 900 crashes, there will be 300 injuries, and there will be 6 deaths. And the work that you're doing here helps prevent some of those. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Austin. Questions, members? All right. Thank you for your advocacy. Senator Carlson thanks you as well. He's our safety champion on the committee. Welcome, Mr. Benner. And after Mr. Benner, I'll invite Tanner Fitzinger forward.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the time. My name is Pat Benner. I'm a legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. We represent 43,000 public and private sector employees across the state, including frontline workers at MnDOT, DVS, and the Met Council. AFSCME is happy to support many of the funding proposals in this legislation. I'd like to thank Chair Dibble for including the governor's proposed operating adjustments for MnDOT and DVS. This funding will go a long way towards ensuring that our members have what they need to maintain our roads and bridges. We also want to express our gratitude for the inclusion of additional funding for operations and maintenance. My hope is that this is a token of the work that our members have done over the last several weeks, meeting with you to discuss our ability to do our jobs and keep as much work within the state as possible as opposed to outsourcing it. We hope the department feels the same way. We're also happy to see several policy changes in the bill. We're supportive of the requirement that driver's education must include a section on work zone safety. The side of the road or even the center of it is our members' workplace nearly every day. It's a dangerous place to be, and it's gotten considerably more dangerous because of the abundance of distractions that we have in our cars, despite the fact we are now a hands-free state. Thank you for prioritizing our safety with this policy change. I also want to thank the chair for including the increase to the no-show fee for driver's license exams. While we want to acknowledge the size of the fine, which is substantial, we feel that tackling the backlog in the metro area specifically requires a bit more cooperation from the public, and especially if further investment isn't possible. Approximately 1 in 10 appointments are canceled within 24 hours, meaning that the ability to fill the slot on short notice is very challenging. This small change could mean a bigger difference than the $20 fee did, though if it doesn't, we can reevaluate this change next year. Though we are quite happy with the bill you've put together, we hope that some of the electric vehicle revenue bills make their way into this bill as it moves forward. Though the revenue may be modest to begin with, it's a positive step for parity between drivers of EVs and gas-powered cars, and will help stabilize the HUTDF as the gas tax tapers off and EVs become a larger part of the state fleet. Again, thank you for putting together a strong transportation bill. I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Benner. Questions, members? All right. So I will welcome Tanner Fitzinger from MAPE and invite Sherry Munyon forward.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tanner Fitzinger, and I am a political affairs coordinator for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. We are a union representing over 18,500 members working in public service across all state agencies, boards, and commissions. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of Senate File 2082. First, we want to say thank you to the chair for the operating adjustments included in Senate File 2082, particularly in light of the difficult budget target this committee was given. Providing the sufficient and necessary increases ensures that our members have the means to properly do their jobs while also maintaining the appropriate levels of service that Minnesotans have come to expect. We also want to voice our support for the changes in Section 54 of the bill, which temporarily adjusts the auto parts sales tax percentage appropriated to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund in 2028 from 43.5% to 36.5%, and in 2029 to 29.5%. This is a responsible way to help address the forecasted budget deficit in that biennium. When this change was implemented in 2023, this committee took a reasonable phased-in approach to the Highway Users Tax Distribution Fund dedication in the event of potential general fund budget shortfalls. The short-term readjustment of the dedication gives our state much-needed flexibility during the time of budget uncertainty at both the state and federal level. Thanks again for your work that you all have put into Senate File 2082.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? Appreciate your being here. Welcome to Sherry Munyon, and we'll jump to Kyle Makarios from the Teamsters.
Chair Dibble, members of the committee, I'm Sherry Munyon, representing the Minnesota Public Transit Association, MIPTA. Thank you for your continued support for public transit across the state of Minnesota. The transportation funding package you passed in 2023 provided historic new funding for transit throughout the state at a time it was very much needed. Transit systems are now seeing a demand for service increase in this post-COVID pandemic era. While transit rides are not quite back to where they were, local communities and residents continue to rely on the service and are increasing their local commitment to maintaining transit operations. The funding in this bill will allow local governments time to ramp up their local matching contribution while maintaining the current bus service that the residents need at a time when vehicle costs, fuel costs, labor costs, and facility costs are all increasing significantly. We also greatly appreciate the lowered funding cut for transit operations in the metropolitan area. MIPTA supports the language changes to the reserve balance policy for the transit assistance account to be no more than 5% of the total revenue. With the previously mentioned increased percentage of revenue from MVES, the Greater Minnesota Transit Account, a 10% reserve policy would mean that the budget reserve will continue to grow significantly as revenues grow, but not based on need. Prior to 2019, there was no budget reserve, and every year since 2019, there has been between 3.5 and 5.4 million sitting in a reserve fund not being used for transit service. The new 5% budget reserve will leave adequate funds available to deal with any emergencies or shortfalls. The best use of these transit funds is putting them to work in our communities, not sitting in a reserve. The Office of Transit already has a two-page list of facility rehabs, collision avoidance warning systems, fare collection systems, and other unfunded projects. Last, in regards to the list of stakeholders for the study of accessible on-demand rides provided by transportation network companies, we do urge you to include at least one representative from a public transit system that provides on-demand service. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bunyan. Questions, members? All right. We're going to jump over Mr. Makarios and go to CJ Linder from Bike MN and MJ Carpio from Move MN. Welcome.
Caught me off guard. Thanks, Chair Dibble, committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today. My name is CJ Linder. I'm the education manager at the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. I'm representing Minnesotans across the state who want the option to walk, bike, enroll safely and conveniently. Thank you to the committee members for your efforts in creating this bill, which includes a number of policies to do exactly that. I'd like to take a minute to just remind committee members about the why we support active transportation, how it benefits Minnesotans and communities, including those who rarely walk, bike, or roll. Walking and biking is good for our economy and local businesses. People using active transportation are more likely to patronize businesses along their route compared to people who drive. Active transportation improvements make our communities nicer places to live and visit, generating economic activity through local tourism, increasing property values, improving the desirability and livability of places to help attract new residents. Active transportation benefits the entire community by reducing pollution, reducing congestion on our roads, improving individuals' health, saving money, and reducing the burden on our healthcare system. But perhaps the most important benefit of active transportation, particularly in this time of budget deficits and looming uncertainty, is that it is the most cost-effective form of transportation. Active transportation costs approximately 1 penny on the dollar per mile compared to roads for motor vehicles, and the return on investment for active transportation projects is approximately 10 times greater than that compared to the return for motor vehicle infrastructure. 1% of the cost and 10% of the return on investment. I'd posit that we can't afford to not support active transportation. We applaud the bill authors who have brought forward these bills before this committee and encourage each of the members to support these sensible policies for the benefit of all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Dibble, Vice Chair Johnson-Stewart, and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is MJ Carpio, Executive Director of Move Minnesota and Move Minnesota Action. We have over 10,000 supporters, and we advocate for transit and active transportation for all. We have both concerns and provisions to uplift in SF2082, and thank you all for your work on it. We have concerns around reducing the appropriation for the Northern Lights Express. It's important to have sustainable regional connections for access to jobs, healthcare, and even enjoyment of the beautiful outdoors that the Minnesota state has to offer, just to name a few. We also have a concern around reducing transit systems operations in the metro area, because this is on top of federally proposed cuts, and so we need our state leaders to do more. We need not just to protect, but actually to increase investments in transit. And part of how we can do this is making sure that our IIJA match funds balance are actually matched and spent. We still have over $20 million. And so it could be short-sighted to leave money on the table when our state has underinvested in transit, biking, walking, and rolling for multiple decades. Our last concern is around authorizing the Met Council to loan to the Department of Transportation. I acknowledge that authorizing does not mean mandating. I've had conversations with MnDOT representatives and Met Council representatives, but we need to ensure that we protect the intended purposes of the metro area sales tax that we fought so hard for a couple years ago. One potential solution for this is redefining highway purposes. And the answer shouldn't be to borrow from funds with very specific purposes. We should give MnDOT the flexibility to spend their own money. I know for a fact that that is an ideal that we can unite around. And now for provisions to uplift, we appreciate authorizing free rides on Metro Transit routes for Metro Mobility certified transit riders. It's an equity win. We appreciate increasing Greater Minnesota Transit appropriation and maintaining the transfer to active transportation account. And lastly, we appreciate the funding match to transportation management organizations in the metro area, like ourselves, for our continued work in travel demand management, commuter education, and congestion mitigation. Here in Minnesota, when the going gets tough, we work together to protect our most vulnerable, and transportation remains to be a large household expense, and we need to alleviate that and make sure our budget reflects that. Thank you all for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much. Questions, members? All right, appreciate it. All right, so moving on, we have Joe Harrington from R Streets, and then we'll ask Owen Young to pop on from on Zoom. All right, Mr. Harrington.
Thank you, Chair Dibble and distinguished members of the committee. It's always a pleasure to be here. My name is Joe Harrington. I'm the policy manager at R Streets. Our organization aims to build safe and sustainable transportation systems that promote vibrant communities across Minnesota. I do want to start by thanking the committee and staff for drafting this bill. I know a lot of time and work went into it, so thank you for that. I'm here to testify to the Policy Advisory Committee language before the committee today, and I'm supportive of other elements of the bill that improve the efficiency and effectiveness of our public process. We're also against cutting the Northern Lights Express appropriation. This section was drafted in response to all of your thoughtful comments last week on the hearing for SF 817. In response to these comments, we worked with the agency and Senate staff to draft the language before you found in section 78. This language provides definitions for MnDOT's existing policy advisory committees to clarify their purpose, creates bylaws to govern these meetings, provides structures for these groups of elected and appointed officials to play a meaningful advisory role, and codifies some public engagement procedures. This provision specifically focuses on existing policy advisory committees to eliminate the fiscal notes FTE and other expenses because these PACs already exist and they're programmed with project budgets and are already staffed at the agency. These measures are critical to ensure that transportation projects can advance smoothly and efficiently, taking the first step in engaging with our local, county, and state elected officials and appointed officials on these committees. Failing to do so runs the risk of projects facing local opposition, projects delays, cost overruns, legal challenges, failing municipal consent, or many other costly problems that the current management system has created at MnDOT. Any of these projects or any of these outcomes could potentially result in millions in costs for Minnesota taxpayers and erode public trust. We need to engage and invest responsibly. Thank you for your support on this measure and other measures in the bill that meet our multimodal transportation needs and improve the accountability of agencies like MnDOT to elected officials, to residents, and to taxpayers across our state. Really appreciate the committee's time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington. Questions, members? All right, so now I'll invite Owen Young to pop on from a remote location. Welcome. We see you.
Hello.
And we hear you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, good. Hello, my name is Owen Young. I'm a Minneapolis resident. I'd like to thank everybody for letting me testify today. And I would like to point out some things I appreciate in this bill, such as the F-Line funding. I'm a big transit rider. You know, I ride my bike every day, so the previous testimonies from Bike MN and Move MN were really positive for me. But I do have a lot of concerns about the revoking of the Northern Lights Express funding, because I felt like in 2023, you know, there was a lot of excitement around this project, and suddenly after the environmental expired, and it feels like the state is sort of giving up on this project, and it can be really hard, I think, for projects like this to get off the ground again if we just abandon all the funding in favor of saving money in the budget. I think that the Senate should give this project the importance it serves, and I feel like it is a very important project. And I feel, in my personal experience, I've felt that intercity rail is much, much underinvested in the U.S., except for probably the northeast of the United States. But I think we can all agree, when a lot of us go on vacation to places that have good intercity rail, people use it instead of, you know, renting a car and driving it out there, because it can be more expensive to rent cars or even own a car. I believe that it isn't right for the state of Minnesota to aggressively cut passenger rail funding, as well as study funding for other passenger rail corridors, and didn't exactly cut funding for road projects and highway projects. I believe that the imbalance on how the state should be sending our, how the state is spending our taxpayer money should be, you know, we need to move the dial, in my opinion, a little bit towards passenger rail. So thank you for everybody's time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Questions, members? All right. Appreciate your testimony. Appreciate your being here. And now we have Darwin Schaeferlein also joining us from a remote location.
Good afternoon. Does my microphone work? It's been a while since I've done this. Sweet. Yep.
We see you and we hear you.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Darwin Schaeferlein, and I am a disabled homeowner in Bloomington, Minnesota. I'm here to speak against the specific provision SES 2082A-2 on this bill as it pertains to eliminating funding set aside for Northern Lights Express and general passenger rail studies. I could start with the recently completed $500 million mega project with the Gold Line being on time and under budget, or perhaps the currently under construction 494 corridor near my house that is hardly cheaper. Perhaps other road widening projects like corridors of commerce, which deserve more scrutiny for fiscal responsibility. Either way, Minnesota is capable of completing mega projects properly. Perhaps I could also mention that it was politicians in the 2000s that lobbied for the North Star to terminate at Big Lake, which led to the very manufactured consent and circular logic of justifying ending its service due to poor performance. This provision would hamper efforts to evaluate a passenger rail alternative that could properly serve St. Cloud, as well as doubly improve service in the Twin Cities North Metro, where I was born and raised. Perhaps I can mention the decades of work it took to get NLX funding across the finish line in 2023. Funding I've waited on since the Fonzie was completed when I was in high school. Funding which I testified and supported on all throughout 2023 with so much energy, time, heart, and soul on the shoulders of advocates decades prior to me. How this provision would betray those efforts and represent even more exercises in bad faith against passenger rail projects in our state of Minnesota. However, I can only say why this matters so much to me in my most sobering statement before any Minnesota governing body. Some of you should remember me from that 2023 omnibus transportation bill as having a terminally ill mother. In that time that has passed, she has since passed as well. My only living biological parent is over an hour away from me, and NLX would be a silver lining to be closer to him without needing to drive up 35, as there are no bus routes that come close enough. Simply put, this is just salt in the wound for me, and I cannot express how upsetting this provision is. Please eliminate those funding cuts for NLX and passenger rail. Find anything else to make this work in the budget, please. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schaeferlein. So we have Bentley Graves. Bentley Graves and Phil Stahlberger. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to take a moment to just express our appreciation for the inclusion in the bill of the provision to direct MnDOT's efficiency savings to the Corridors of Commerce program. This provision builds upon the great work that MnDOT has done for the last decade to maximize efficiencies in its program, and it will increase transparency into this process and better track the reinvestment of these efficiency savings going forward. We also believe that putting these efficiency savings to work through the Corridors of Commerce program makes sense, especially given the program's strong bipartisan, bicameral support for and its track record of advancing many important projects around the state. As I said, this provision will help to build continued support for and increase transparency around the department's work to stretch the taxpayer dollars invested into our transportation system, and we greatly appreciate its inclusion in the bill. We also want to take a moment, Mr. Chair, just to signal our concerns about the reduced funding for the HUTDF through the auto parts for 28 and 29. We understand the difficult decisions that had to be made around the target this committee was given, but our hope is that as this bill moves forward, as the process moves forward this session, we can find a way to restore that funding and protect this important funding stream for our transportation system. Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Mr. Stahlberger. Oh, just hold on. Questions for Mr. Graves. All right. Didn't get away so fast. All right. Mr. Stahlberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Phil Stahlberger, here today representing Rider Academy, which trains over 1,000 motorcyclists across the street in this year's parking lot, which you may see, as well as Aero Stitch, which is a safety riding gear company located in Duluth, Minnesota. First of all, I want to thank the committee for its work last session in passing the lane filtering and lane splitting legislation, as well as including the $200,000 in funding for education. Want to also thank you for putting the contents of Senate File 3259 in the bill, which are the additional parameters, which I took at liberty to help with Mr. Tim Greenfield in drafting of some of the concerns that we heard from the Department of Public Safety, such as where lane splitting should or should not occur, and we agree with those. Lane splitting and lane filtering is about safety, and thanks to this committee for recognizing that last session. Since then, I can tell you there are numerous states that are looking to adopt Minnesota's law and copy that into their state as well. Rider Academy has already included the law, the new law, which goes into effect July 1 of this year, in their training of motorcyclists today. In addition, I want to go on record and say we do have a little bit of a concern with delaying the further effective date of lane filtering and lane splitting for the following reasons. The private sector has already invested thousands of dollars in educating not just motorcyclists, but car dealerships, drivers as well. Groups such as Abate Minnesota, law firms such as Law Tigers, Nicolet Law, TSR, have already donated thousands of dollars in educational campaign. One of this is I'm holding here, which is a campaign that Abate is already doing, socializing the new law, which goes into effect July 1 of this year. Nearly every motorcycle club in the state has endorsed this law and does not want it delayed. We also go so far as to say that the concerns with the delayed effective date might also put more pressure on Commander Blagojevich and the troopers with more confusion about when this law actually takes into effect. So I also want to just say that the untimely death of Mr. David Burley from the Blue Plate Club was unfortunate. He was an avid motorcyclist, and he and I actually were working on bike night every Thursday at the Lowry, and he was an avid supporter of this law and would hope to see this come to fruition. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stahlberger. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stahlberger, I just wanted to clarify particularly Abate Minnesota and how they feel about this. I heard from Abate members after the session last year, I think it was, where the law was changed to allow the lane splitting and lane filtering. And the Abate members that contacted me were not happy. It didn't go through them. They thought it was unsafe. I've heard now from constituents who are not riders who also feel that it's unsafe. So I just wanted to clarify, has Abate Minnesota, have they supported this provision now, today?
Mr.
Stahlberger.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, Abate came out in support of the legislation last session. Even though all of their members may not have supported it, including those in your district, the organization as a whole did. I can tell you, lane filtering and lane splitting probably isn't for every motorcyclist. If they're not comfortable doing it, you shouldn't do it. This isn't a mandate to do it. Someone such as myself, who was in a motorcycle accident 2 years ago, could have avoided being rear-ended by a distracted driver had I been able to be in between cars rather than be a sitting duck on traffic. So not every motorcyclist is going to love it. Not every car driver is going to love it, but it really is about safety. We put the speed parameters in the bill on purpose to make sure this is about getting out of the way of distracted drivers and being protected. Again, not every motorcyclist has the skills, and nor should be lane splitting. And when I spoke last night at bike night up in Maple Grove, Minnesota, and talk to them about the pros and cons of this. And again, each motorcyclist needs to be confident in their skills and would urge motorcyclists to A, be trained, B, know the law, and C, be comfortable on the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I think just a brief follow-up. It was actually also in the Abate magazine itself that I read after the end of session that was not in favor. So if you have new information and they are supportive, I'd be glad to see that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. All right. Anything further, members, for Mr. Stahlberger? All right. All right, so at this point, I'm going to go to the table, and we will take the... Oh, hold on. I always forget. Would anyone else like to testify on the bill? Please come forward. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Sam Krieger with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here representing two of my clients, the Deputy Register Business Owners Association, as well as Circle Pines Deputy Register number 150. I just wanted to thank you for two provisions that you've included in this bill, Mr. Chair. First and foremost, the provision related to no-fee transaction reimbursements for deputy registers. This is a huge step in the right direction in ensuring the vitality of these important and essential businesses that provide these services across every corner of the state. The second thing I would like to thank you for including is the language allowing the deputy register in the city of Circle Pines to become a full service provider. This is going to be a huge boon to the North Metro and those cities that are growing so fast up in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Would anyone else like to step forward to testify? Okay, with that, we'll close this portion of the public hearing. I'm going to go to the table, and Senator Johnson Stewart is going to take the gavel.
I just got it, just a second. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Give me 1 second to pull up the amendments. Right here. All right, Senator Dibble, to your bill and amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to present Senate File 2082. And respond to questions and entertain any ideas that members have to make the bill a little better. I did want to touch base, as I promised on Monday, to talk a little bit about one of the initiatives that is kind of new but kind of not new. It's reflective of some of the bills that we heard previously in committee, and it's trying to respond to some of those ideas, as well as some of the discussion that we had in committee about the parts they liked and the parts they might have want to have modified. And of course, that has to do with the elements that you find in Article 3, Sections 7, and then also carried further in Section 46 and then 49 through 51. I'm just going to be very broad in brushstroke overview, and we'll respond to questions. But the overall goal of those sections and that initiative is to really hit on a better process by which MnDOT plans, selects, designs, and delivers transportation solutions, not just a focus on projects per se, but really responding to identified needs by the community, our legislative requirements and policies that we've set forth that we would like from transportation projects and the transportation system, and just really a more holistic way of including and making sure that we're building in our traditional measures of speed, volume, congestion, level of service, safety, but also really taking a look at cost benefit, efficiency, long-term sustainability, flexibility, alternatives, health, livability, and access for everyone, all users. These are all things that we expect of our transportation system, that it be inclusive. It's in our laws as well, so it's just trying to really hit upon a better scoping, a better purpose and need process, and ensuring then that the resulting highway investment plan document reflects all of that planning that's gone into the front end of deciding what kind of transportation solutions are needed so people have access and mobility where they need it best. It ensures that the planning and design and decision making includes a personal visit to the site, real world conditions, and makes use of professional perspectives other than just engineers, and incorporates all users, like I said before. And then it adds some of these considerations to the MnDOT's existing and standing complete streets policy, as well as their guidance for how they implement complete streets. So I just wanted to mention an overview of that section. We have a few other what we call chairs initiatives, and those really are around responding to some of the conversation we've had on the need to improve the availability of on-demand transit service for people with disabilities. You know, a lot of discussion about metro mobility, and can we possibly really improve the kind of transportation network companies kind of service. And so there's that initiative and a couple of others that aren't springing to mind right now. So those are pretty self-explanatory, just taking a look at some ideas that are out there and coming back with some of those, having that conversation in interim and coming back with some ideas for solutions next session. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll pause for questions on the bill itself. If anyone has any at this point.
Members?
I'll
Sorry, that's right, I'm not the chair.
Members, any questions for Senator Dibble? All right, Senator Dibble, to your amendments.
All right, so I'll have council help me. I believe we have to start first with the A26, which is a technical amendment. And if Ms. Boyd and Mr. Greenfield can help us understand the A26 a little better.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Mr. Greenfield?
Madam Chair, I'm going to pivot briefly to Ms. Boyd for the first portion of the technical amendment, which is the A26, timestamped 1:56 p.m.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're not going to go through every line because a lot of it is purely technical suggestions from the reviser, et cetera. I'm just going to highlight just a couple that might look a little weird. So on lines 1.3 and 1.4, 1.3, 1.4, that is just a clarification in the transfers language from the flexible highway account for turnbacks in the trunk highway fund and the county and municipal funds. And we just left off the words appropriated from the trunk highway fund. So put that in there so the money could actually be used. Line 1.11 is inserting the word grants as an allowable use of money for the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety. That was a change that was made in prior appropriations in the bill later, but was not picked up in the new appropriation for the Advisory Council. And then on lines 113 to 121 is just a revamping of the transfer section. Does not change the amounts or purposes. It adds some new language on lines 116 to 119 to comply with budget rules about how to carry forward transfers.
All right. Any questions on the A26 amendment? Oh, there's more pages, sorry.
Question.
Well, Senator Nelson, I think Senator, you still have to talk some more? Oh, Krista, you're not done yet. Oh, sorry, Ms. Boyd's not done yet, sorry. All right, Senator Nelson, you're next once we get through this.
I'm just looking at the amendment, the A26, and maybe I'm missing something, but on lines 1.13 through 1.21 on the transfers, I'm just wondering what page on the bill is that?
Ms. Boyd? Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Sorry, Madam Chair, it would be in section 5, I believe, in Article 1, section 6. It's after the...
Section 6, page 19.
Page 19.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, back to who? Back to Mr. Greenfield.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry for continuing the discussion on the technical amendment, but the other, what appears to be daunting changes begin on page 2. There's some technical changes beginning on lines 2.4 to 2.20 that modify Senate File 2203. On a technical level, that is this Empowering Small Community Partnership Program at the University of Minnesota. Moving forward on page 3 of the A26, I want to highlight a technical deficiency with the technical amendment. On page 3.17 and 3.18 of the technical amendment, that instruction should just read page 79, delete section 46, and insert the lines 3.19 to 4.12 on the next page. So I basically, if this were to be engrossed into the bill, the A26 would have a section that doesn't have any changes, so that's a technical deficiency. Moving on to page 4, there was a question about the deletion of the effective date for the Corridors of Commerce reallocation of MnDOT efficiency savings. That's the instruction on page 4, line 13. That effective date that's specified in the A2 is July 1, 2025, which is the default statutory effective date for any section in a appropriations bill, so it's redundant to have that effective date in the bill. And then there's additional, then the remainder portion of page 4 and page 5 are technical corrections. It's mostly grammatical and technical changes on page 5. And then on page 6 is just some changes to the title narrative. So I just wanted to highlight the change on page 3 is maybe the most obvious thing that may change from the language of the committee report to what's incorporated here.
Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. Ms. Boyd, does anybody have any questions for them before we move on? All right, so Senator Dibble moves the A26. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the assent of council and fiscal, I believe we need to next move to the A30. Is that correct? Okay. So I will offer the A30 amendment.
Senator Dibble offers the A30. Senator Dibble, to your amendment.
So I believe this is actually something that may be temporarily located in our bill, as the committee is aware. There's an authorization for $100 million in debt service, or excuse me, in trunk highway bonding. That is a dynamic conversation with the bonding committee, I'm not 100% sure that we will hang on to $100 million in trunk highway bonding authorization. So stay tuned on that, but for the time being, until we sort that out, these are the numbers that fit into that level of debt service.
Anybody have questions for Senator Dibble on the A30 amendment? All right, Senator Dibble moves the A30. Senator Dibble moves the A30 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, the A30 is adopted. Senator Dibble, the next amendment I have listed is the A35. Correct. Is that correct? All right, Senator Dibble, to your amendment.
And as I understand, this is an NLX technical correction. So it has to do with the cancellation and how that's reflected in our target.
All right, members, any question on the A35 amendment? All right, Senator Dibble moves the A35 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? All right, the A35 is adopted. Should I keep going, Senator Dibble? Do you have more amendments?
Not at this time. Maybe I should just get done with mine.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'll offer the A15 amendment.
All right. Members, Senator Dibble offers the A15 amendment. I think I'm waiting to get a copy. Senator Dibble, maybe you can describe it as we're waiting for a copy. Okay, here comes the A15. Looks like it has to do with Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. Is that the wrong one?
Actually, I had a different one in mind, but I'll offer this on behalf of Senator Carlson.
Okay.
The A15. And so, Madam Chair, this dedicates a small amount of the metro-wide sales tax for transit to micro transit purposes in communities around the metro area. It basically, and I'll ask council and fiscal if I'm right on this, they started, we had one-time micro transit grants that were made in the last budget cycle, and this continues that service, which is showing to be very, very successful, something I think ultimately we'd like to take to scale, because it solves a lot of last mile problem, a lot of mobility problems for seniors and people with disabilities, et cetera. It's neighborhood scale service that gets people to transit service or to the kinds of things they need kind of localized within their communities around the metro.
All right, so the A15 is referring to Section 17, Micro Transit Service. Does anybody have any questions for Senator Dibble? All right, Senator Dibble moves the A15. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. All right, the A15 is adapted. Senator Dibble, you must have some more up your sleeve.
I do, although they're not my here. So I have the A14.
All right.
Which is not in my pile, so maybe that's
Senator Dibble.
And that's a very simple, Madam Chair, just moves the number down on the Washington Avenue Bridge suicide barrier construction, because the project estimates have come in a little bit more accurately, and $15 million is not the number. It's been pegged actually a little bit less than the $9 million, but the reason we picked the figure $9 million is because we would also like to see some better temporary barriers than what is out there that are, that is both more aesthetically pleasing and more more effective than what's there now, while the final solution, and that's going to be around $300,000, and then the remainder of the project is around $8.5 million. We do have language if this, even if the $9 million ends up being too much, that those dollars would then come back into the fund from which they originate, which of course is the bike ped or the non-motorized active transportation element of the metro-wide sales tax for transit slash active transportation.
All right, so Senator Dibble just explained that the A14 reduces the amount appropriated to the Washington Avenue Bridge safety enhancements, has been reduced from $15 million to $9 million, and that this still covers the temporary barrier improvement. Does anybody have any questions on the A14? All right, Senator Dibble, all in favor of the A14, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right, the A14 is adopted.
And one more.
What number is it?
It is A27.
All right, Senator Dibble moves the A27.
Which I'm moving on behalf again of Senator Carlson.
Okay. Does everybody have the A27 yet, or is it being passed out? Looks like it's still coming.
Thanks.
Senator Dibble, it looks like the A27 refers to safety initiatives. Is that what you're thinking? Are we on the right one?
That's correct. So right. What this does clarifies some of the items which the Advisory Council on Traffic Safety can fund or undertake. Again, I believe this is language that we picked up from the last budget cycle, and so we're just clarifying for either their grant-making purposes or the activities they undertake as well, the kinds of things that they would be looking most closely at: improvements to rural high-risk roads, traffic safety training for law enforcement, safe and sober rides home, studying motorcycle filtering. We clearly need a little more information, a little more clarity on that question. And work zone safety, work zone redesign activities, and safe road zones.
Great. All right, so Senator Dibble has the A27 amendment. Members, you should have it. Does anybody have any questions on the A27? All right, all in favor of adopting the A27, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Nay. Okay, the A27 is adopted. I keep forgetting this.
All right.
Any more?
That's it for me, Madam Chair. I'll stand for questions or further amendments.
All right. Any questions for Senator Dibble before we move on? All right. I believe that Senator McEwen has the A28. Senator McEwen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do have the A28 amendment.
Did I say A28?
I think you said A27.
I did. I apologize. All right. Senator McEwen has the A28. My fault. Senator McEwen, to your amendment.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I can describe the amendment, make sure everybody has a copy of it. But what this amendment would do would return some of the funding that has unfortunately out of necessity been cut for the Northern Lights Express rail project to connect Duluth by rail to the Twin Cities. It compared to the allocation that had been previously allotted for that project, that was the full portion that was required for the matching amount from our state. And unfortunately, we haven't seen the movement that we've needed to from the feds, and because of the way that the election has gone, elections have consequences, and so we see this necessity. to claw back that money for budgeting purposes. So what my A28 amendment would do was allocate just a small portion of that to the Northern Lights Express to continue work on that project. Applications have been filed with the Federal Transportation Agency. They're awaiting to hear what will happen with that. And you know, we know that it's a long shot, at least in the near future right now, but there, as we heard today from multiple testifiers, there's a lot of hope around this project. There's been decades now of work and preparation done in my city of Duluth and by allies statewide along the route in support of and in rallying around the possibility of bringing rail back to this corridor, which it used to be back until the 80s. So I'm very, very sad about that clawing back of that money, and as those testifiers who spoke so beautifully about it today also are. And I guess, Madam Chair, if you would allow me, before we take a vote on this amendment, I just want to, first I will also add that the A28 amendment would also give a small amount of money toward a federal match for development of the Big Sky North Coast passenger rail corridor. So it would also take a portion of the money and have it go toward developing rail to increase options for Minnesotans, not just along the Northern Lights Express corridor, which hopefully we'll see some movement on that, but in general, just people being able to have some choices. So I'm proud to have that be part of the amendment too. That's what the amendment is. But Madam Chair and members, I just want to speak briefly to the situation that we're in right now budgetarily. We heard, you know, some of the testimony that came today talking about the difficult budgetary situation we're in, and I concur with that analysis, and I first off want to thank Chair Dibble for the work that he has done under very difficult circumstances to put together a omnibus bill for this committee and the jurisdiction that we oversee that carries forward the vision that the last years of his leadership in this committee have really done an excellent job in furthering. And I'm so sorry that Chair Dibble, you were put in this situation to have to make a choice like this. I want to just make sure that people, anybody who's watching this committee now are seeing this clawing back of the money for the Northern Lights Express, that these are choices that we're making right now. That hard budget that we're facing isn't just some ephemeral thing that exists. What we're deciding here in the Minnesota Senate right now is that we do not have the political courage to raise taxes appropriately on the wealthiest corporations and the wealthiest individuals in our state, not only to pay for this, to pay for responsible rail and good and a transportation bill that we all deserve, but we are going to see, and we've already seen, proposed cuts in essential areas like healthcare, long-term care, all of housing, all of the essential services that our government provides. And we're seeing the cuts coming from the federal government in a rate that I think few of us even imagined would ever happen. So those two things combined are very horrifying to me. And I want people to know that in our peer nations around the world, those citizens often have their basic rights guaranteed. So that includes health care, it includes full public education, pre-K through secondary, through college. It includes subsidized child care, it includes guarantees about housing, and it also includes good quality public transportation. And we heard the testimony about those of us who visited our peer nations and have had the good fortune to experience those things, like, wow, you could have those things. You really could. So when we have these discussions, when we're in committee like this, looking at cuts, We should have been asking even before we were here, why didn't we have all those things? We're the wealthiest nation to ever exist on the planet. We wouldn't know it because we're always fighting over scraps. But it does not have to be this way. It should not be this way. Even here in Minnesota, a more progressive taxation state, the top 1% of Minnesotans own about a third of the wealth in our state. That's wrong. And it's unsustainable for a democracy to keep going on like that. So I really ask your elected officials about these choices that we're making. Ask them why. Why are we making these cuts? Because we don't have to be. We really don't. Make those connections between revenue that we're putting in and the cuts that you're going to be seeing across the board to basic services. So with that, Madam Chair, I apologize for getting on my soapbox, but these connections are heartbreaking to me. And just to know that it doesn't have to be that way is, and to see it getting worse and worse really over my entire adult lifetime is just appalling. So with that, Madam Chair, I would respectfully ask for everyone's support, if you're so inclined, for the adoption of the A28 amendment that would provide at least some meager amount of funding, relatively speaking, toward keeping the Northern Lights Express project moving forward if possible, and then also extend some support for the Big Sky North Coast passenger rail corridor. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator McEwen, and please don't ever apologize. You were elected and you deserve a soapbox. I do have a quick question for you. I personally am not familiar with the Big Sky North Coast passenger rail corridor. I can guess what it is, but could you just give the committee members just a brief, where is that from and where does it go to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have some familiarity with it, and I actually have a map that I could show people. The corridor would run from Chicago up through Minnesota, through North Dakota, and then into Montana, and I believe also be restoring a corridor and develop it again. So this would be money that could go toward the corridor identification and development program toward that corridor. I have a map if you'd like to see it. I could pass it around too.
Thank you, Senator McEwen. I assume that goes through Moorhead then?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yep, and then up.
All right, so I know what that corridor is.
Yeah.
All right, anybody who wants the map, Senator McEwen will bring it over, but I'll open up to questions. Senators, Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator McEwen. So I see we're clawing that back. So what, there's roughly $8.8 million that would stay in that. Is that correct about, that's what I'm hearing from fiscal, approximately $8.8 million. And then maybe to fiscal, when does that expire? Because I know that money is scheduled to expire at some date, and I can't remember the date, if it's 28 or 29. Do we have a date on when that would expire? And I assume that would go back to the general fund if it expires, if there's not a project.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Dibble, Senator McEwen, staff, does anybody know when that expiration date is? Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair and Senator, I believe that, I'm double checking for you, but I believe the expiration is fiscal year 29 and it would cancel back to the general fund at that point.
Thank you, thank you for that. And then, so also, and would that money be frozen then to stay in less project? Would more money be expended between now and 29 and 2020 if that project does not go through? I guess I'm asking is, do they plan on continuing spending any of that $8.8 million?
Senator McEwen, Senator Dibble, Ms. Boyd, I'm not sure who can answer that.
Madam Chair, I actually can't answer that, but I wanted to correct myself. I did find it in the bill 2 years ago. The expiration is actually fiscal year 28.
Thank
you. But I'm sorry, I don't have more information on the uses of it.
Senator Dibble, do you have any information for Senator Jasinski?
Nothing more, I think, than what Ms. Boyd said. I mean, the appropriation we made, was one-time money, capital matching dollars, that absent an extension would, of course, cancel back to the general fund. Is that the question?
Yeah, Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator DeBolt, no. My question is, so if that amount gets changed, is there, with this, would it allow any more expenditures of that amount? Again, my concern is we're spending money that a project that might never come to fruition, it expires in 2028. So my concern is I want to make sure that if that money does go there, in case it does get changed and project does come to fruition, is any more money going to be spent between now and an actual complete approval of that? My concern is we're spending money that to a project that may never get done. So that would be my concern and question.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I would again defer to council to see if those funds could be expended. I mean, as I understand, they're funds that, you know, were originally intended to be the matching for capital purposes. I don't know if the funds could be used to continue to do some of the preparation work in the event that the federal government is going to be moving ahead with kind of the next phase, the next grant, et cetera. I don't have a precise answer to the question if it has to be reserved just for capital construction purposes or if any of the pre-work, design, engineering, et cetera, work is an eligible use of these funds or not.
Madam Chair, Senator Dibble, I wonder if MnDOT would be able to comment on that, if they could confirm or deny how that would, if that would be used or not.
Mr. Radin. State your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs, and my understanding is the language that had the original appropriation would allow us to continue doing that project development work. We have been trying not to spend too many of those funds because they are primarily for matching the federal funds, and we have a federal-state partnership grant application in currently that we're waiting to hear from. And, you know, working with the Federal Railroad Administration, we got signals from them that our application should, we could ask for the full construction amount, but we could also do kind of a phased grant application. And so this $8 million would actually be exactly what we need if we get a scaled back grant under the FSP program. So I think our intention would be primarily to try to preserve those funds in the anticipation of a federal grant. But, I don't think there's any restriction that would prohibit us from spending the dollars on continued project development work.
Thank you. Senator Jasinski.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Again, that's my concern. I know we talked about other projects across the state, and I think I asked MnDOT for a number on the Rethink I-94, and that was, we expended $19.2 million that have been spent, and now that project's been scrapped. So $19.2 million that could have been used for other projects is not. So my concern in this one is we have $8.8 million, and I understand MnDOT is trying to be conservative not spending that money, but again, that if they were spending money on something that never comes to fruition is my concern with taxpayer money. So with that, I'd ask people vote against it, and I'd ask for a roll call. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator McEwen, help me understand, the Big Sky North Coast passenger rail line, is that the same line that we currently get serviced by Amtrak? Isn't that the same corridor?
No. Senator McEwen, sorry.
Thank you. No, and perhaps some others can speak to some more detail about the line, and I also have some, as I said, some handouts that I can share if you'd like to see them.
Senator Howe.
So,
Senator Dibble, sorry.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Short answer is no. We can maybe make the duplicate the map, and this is a what's called a corridor identification process. It's a very small amount of money just to, continue to look at the viability, the feasibility, et cetera. And it's in conjunction with a number of other states that go out to the west. I think you might be thinking of the Empire Builder, which is not what this is. This goes up to and through Fargo and then across. And so it's not existing service.
Well, thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so this doesn't, this wouldn't be the same line that ends up out in Seattle from Minneapolis.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Howell, that is correct. As in, you are correct. It will not end up in Seattle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, is there different tracks? It seems like we don't have a plethora of tracks headed west from here, but I'll leave it go. Thank you.
Senator Dibble, do you know if, in fact, there is separate tracks?
Yes, I believe it takes advantage of existing freight tracks.
Okay. Same corridor. All right.
Similar.
Committee members, who else? Any questions? All right. With that, Senator Dibble moves the... Which one were we? Oh, Senator McEwen, sorry. Moves the A28. And Senator Jasinski has asked for a roll call. So you do the roll call, right? Alex will do the roll call. I'll indicate you're in favor by saying aye or nay.
Chair Dibble?
Yes.
Vice Chair Johnson Stewart?
Yes.
Senator Jasinski?
No.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Farnsworth?
No.
Senator Herr?
Yes.
Senator Howe?
Nay.
Senator Lang?
No.
Senator McEwen?
Yes.
Senator Nelson?
No.
Senator Pa?
Thank you, members. We have 6 ayes, 5 noes. The motion is adopted. Members, as we move forward, just a reminder, if we are not able to complete our work today by 5, we have the room reserved at 5:30 Thursday to wrap up our work on the bill. So, chop, chop. All right, Senator McEwen, do you have additional amendments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have more, but.
Well, actually, I've been asked to go to Senator Herr, if we could have that. I think Senator Herr is double booked. So, Senator Herr, I believe you have 2 amendments. Thank you, Senator McEwen. Which one do you want to present first?
Yes, I do. Let's see. I'd like to present the A-17 amendment.
All right. With that, Senator Herr presents the A-17. Senator Herr.
Madam Chair, in my district, there's just immediate construction along RK, and it was taken by surprise. MnDOT has scheduled it sometime later this summer, but it just happened sooner than we expected. And regardless when or where the construction take place, it will impact business and community of that area. So this amendment here is to create an assistance program for construction impact.
All right, members, you should be getting the A-17. The A-17 concerns Section 5, Local Business Construction Impacts Assistance Program. I'll give members a moment to look at it. This is the A-17. And Senator Herr, it looks like this bill provides financial assistance to small businesses impacted by a construction project.
That is correct, and I appreciate Chair Dibble for working with me on this language itself. So there's more detail here. I'm not an expert in this area as much as Senator Dibble, but that is correct.
All right. Members, questions? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator. So is this specific to just the one project, or is this more of a statewide program is my question? I think I brought up to you before when we heard this. So is this a statewide that goes in for impact on local business, or is it just to a specific project? I'm trying to find that out, but maybe.
Yeah, Senator Jasinski, thank you. It looks like it's statewide, but Senator Herr, do you have any feedback?
Yeah, it is statewide, and it's not specific, although currently my district is impacted by it.
So, Madam Chair.
All right, Senator Dibble.
Thanks, yeah, so, yeah, this is kind of responsive to the issues that were raised by Senator Herr. You know, Senator Kroon has a similar bill that we had invited to be heard, but he wasn't quite ready at the time. You know, and then of course we know anecdotally that a number of other of us have similarly impacted areas. Mm-hmm. I of course have the Hennepin Avenue situation. And so this is an idea to at least get into the bill so we can have more discussion about what might make sense on a more comprehensive and statewide basis. You know, it does you know, say that it would take funds from the project proceeds, you know, what's been budgeted and allocated for the project itself. I'm not convinced that's necessarily the best idea or not, but would love the opportunity to continue to have this discussion about what might make sense if we need to identify some specific areas in the short term to help out that we know are having particularly consequential effects. Probably all seen the since the Arcade Street hearing, then that was before the construction even started, and then just by surprise, all of the barriers went up, and they were, you know, completely blocked the street and without any prior communication, and in a way that was not understood in terms of business access. So it's a slightly separate problem. I don't know if we're gonna, there's an A18 that talks about some of those procedural items and how transportation agencies and MnDOT in particular is gonna work better with business districts and business communities as they're contemplating construction and then through the construction phase. We just wanted to respond to what we're hearing about. So hence the A17 and possibly the A18.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Dibble, and thank you, Senator Herr. Again, I think I believe in the idea of this because I think it does happen. I like that it's not as specific, because I know at one time I think you offered for a specific project, and I brought it up that it would be better statewide. My question on the dollar amount, though, so say a project is, let's just say, $2 million. They do the project, it comes in on budget, and they find out, you know, 6 months later that a business was impacted, and they're asking for, I think it's $30,000. Where does that money come if there's no money left in the construction fund to fund the impact of the business? Or how does the process of that work is my question.
Well, I might offer up some insight, Senator Jasinski. Typically, we do have money that we hold. 1% of the total project would, if this goes, which again, I think that's up for negotiation. But I think they should have money at the end in the form of what's called a retainage, or we always have some contingency left over, but it's a good point to bring up. Senator Dibble, do you have anything that you might want to offer, or Senator Herr?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jasinski, I think the idea is, you know, rather than coming back later and, you know, and maybe you've hit on something that would need to be improved and revised in the bill, but the idea is to, you know, be working proactively with businesses to anticipate the level of consequence and impact that they're going to have. I mean, part of this might be, preventative, so that we're working more meaningfully with businesses and these districts, such that they won't suffer the kinds of consequences like we saw in the Uptown area along Hennepin Avenue, where, you know, I lost 70% of the businesses in Uptown. I mean, it's really, really a shame to see what's going on in Uptown. And they were, like, all access was blocked for months and months and months and months, and many who run very, very tight margins couldn't survive. So literally 70% of the businesses in the Uptown area are gone now. Efforts to try to work proactively with the Road Authority and Metro Transit were unsuccessful to come up with better ideas for signage and for access and that sort of thing. And efforts to get funds into their hands through the Promise Grant have proven highly ineffectual because Deed sat on the new authorization for over a year. Not even a single dollar has gone out to those businesses yet to date, even though those dollars were authorized a year ago. So we're trying to be a little more proactive here.
Yeah, Senator Dibble, I think you bring up a good point. And members, often you hear me talk about how capital investment money brings money to local businesses, but a lot of times it's frankly, I mean, even in a small town, I've seen the Quick Trip or the corner gas station just be desperate for help to get even through a week. So I really applaud your effort, and I think there's some room for us to figure out just exactly how this might work. But Senator Jasinski, do you have more?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again, Senator Hurd, again, I think I just got it, I'm trying to figure out how it all works, but again, it's for profit and nonprofits, and then it's about 80% gross revenue, and it gets into quite a thing, and I guess who's administering, and some of those, all those questions have some concerns to me, not to be just giving out money. But I agree that business can be impact. I'm just wondering how the qualification is and how the money's administered, who administers it, and those things are my concerns. But again, I agree with the concept. I'm just concerned because I haven't quite had the time to absorb how it all works is my concern. Again, I agree with it, but I'm concerned of how it's all administered and those things, and the financial impact on the project as well. So now we're going to be trying to fund roads, and now we're funding economic development or instances on impacts on business with trunk highway funds and things like that. So again, that's my concern. We're using that. We've always talked about leakages, and I know I had to bring it up once at least today about a leakage, and I think in this instance we're actually using road money to supplement business, and I get they're impacted, but those are my concerns. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. And upon reading subdivision 4, it looks like Quick Trip would in fact not be eligible because they're not headquartered in Minnesota. So something to notice. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dibble, I too understand the need for something like this. I've seen it in my district. I've seen it with personal properties. And but my concern is maybe this just isn't the right time. Are we not quite? I can see where we might need to share the risk a little bit. In other words, if it's just taking the project itself and the money for the project to actually mitigate some of the losses because of the construction. Maybe there's a way to do some better risk sharing so that perhaps more projects actually contribute a very small amount, but it's only used in these larger areas of great risk where there would be more loss. So I think there's maybe an innovative way to get to where we need to go without doing two things. One, using money for roads and bridges for mitigation for construction, and also making just perhaps that one project use part of its construction project dollars to actually mitigate some of the concerns that come with the construction. Maybe there's a way to kind of share that risk more broadly, but I don't have it at the top of my head, but maybe there's something that could be worked on going forward.
Senator Howe.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I like the program because I can see projects in my jurisdiction, my district, that is going to be impacted like this and has been. But I truly believe this is a deed, should be rested in deed and not here in MnDOT. That's what my suspicions would be. I think they're much more suited to run something like this than we are, and that's my opinion.
Senator Howe, response? Senator Hurd, sorry.
Yes, I can respond to each of you. Senator Howe, we did take a probe at this singularity using my district alone, and it was not successful when it get to deed. Although they like the idea, but there's no funding anywhere that we can grab into relate to workforce development or the general fund, which is very short this year. And so there is a question mark there. We also look in possibility tap into the Main Street economic development that relate to COVID-19 and civil unrest. Even that money has been used off. So here is where we are, the last hope to create
a broader, so it's just not my district alone, but my project was a test to see whether it could tap into economic development, and the answer is no right now. And so this committee is the only hope for a broader support for issues similar to what happened on RK Avenue. So hopefully I can answer you, and Sir Jasinski, this is something that you agree to, you know, it sounds like you agree to, although the detail may be ironed out. I trust in my chair that he will, you know, iron out some of the detail. And so I ask for your support as well.
Thank you. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again, Senator Herso. Another thing, just again, reading, giving a little more time to read through it while there's been discussion going. Line 2.26 has some concerns to me. It's being allocated equally among all recipients. So if business A was a high volume, let's say gas station, not Quick Trip, because it's not in Minnesota, I get that, but let's just say another gas station, and you have another business that's a very small volume, let's just say they have office space for a housing company or something like that. So there's a different impact on those businesses, but in this bill, each recipient would have to get the same amount. So if one business was impacted by thousands and thousands of dollars and one business was not impacted by that amount, they're both going to get the same settlement. So that's another concern of mine. Again, we have to, I get the impact of it, but we can't be allocating them equally if different businesses were impacted differently financially. Thank you.
Yeah, noted. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I think we're coming to a close on today's markup, so we'll have to continue tomorrow. I think Senator Jasinski, Senator Nelson, Senator Howe have all raised good points, although I just do disagree with the deed thing. I've seen them just sit on their hands for a year now and haven't gotten a single dollar out to my businesses, even though they're desperate and we authorized those funds $1 million a year ago, and not a single dollar has gone out from deed yet. So I'm very, very unhappy about that. In the meantime, we've lost a lot of businesses who needed that money at the point at which we appropriated it. So I agree with that, almost everyone. And so if I could ask Senator Herr to withdraw the A-17, we'll do some work on it between now and tomorrow and see if there's something that committee members would rally around.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Herr?
Thank you, Chair Dibble, and I will withdraw this amendment.
Senator Herr, you also have the A-18. Do you want to?
The A-18 is very, very similar. You know, I was hoping that we adapt the A-17 first and follow with the A-18. The A-18 is giving instruction of procedural how to handle what it had to do with signage direction. And if it's construction start early, then adequately inform the communities and business along that corridor. If it's delaying, then, you know, it's just instruction for MnDOT to follow. So
Senator Dibble, how do we want to proceed?
So we'll try to merge the A-18 and the A-17 and address some of the concerns that have been articulated in the hearing today.
All right. So with that, A-17 has been withdrawn. We will take it up. Is today Wednesday? Yeah. We'll take it up tomorrow when this committee reconvenes at 5 o'clock. Oh, 5:30, sorry. Boy, I'm going to get fired in this room. And I hope that everybody can make it back. We have important work to do. Senator Dibble, do you want to close us out?
Can I just sneak in one more quick little amendment?
Oh, certainly. What number is it?
It's the A-38, which was just drawn up.
All right, with that, Senator Dibble moves the A-38, and we'll see if we have copies.
So this is the e-bike rebate that is being heard separately as a standalone. I believe it's going to be heard after the break. So it may well come back into this bill at some point. But rather than having the entire omnibus go to taxes, which would be necessary if this element were to remain in the bill. I'd like to avoid a second stop. We'll have Senator Abler have his hearing at taxes on the e-bike rebate elements. If the tax committee sees fit to support
and or makes changes, and at some point we may be able to pick that piece back up and put it back into this bill. So I offer the A38 just to delete those parts of the omnibus.
All right, Senator Dibble moves the A38. Does anybody have any questions? I'll just pretend I know what you just said. Because everybody else has been here longer than me. Any questions? All right. All in favor of the A38, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. The A38 is adopted. So with that, we will reconvene. We will reconvene tomorrow at 5:30 in this room. And with that, we are adjourned.
Madam Chair,
oh, wait, Senator Dibble.
If you could just please formally lay Senate File 2082 as amended on the table.
Okay, with that, we lay Senate File 2082 as amended.
On the table?
On the table. And after that, we're adjourned. Oh, wait, do we have to vote on laying it on the table?
No.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hey, Senator Jasinski, you could come up with a whole bunch of things to tell me, and I probably believe it. With that, everyone has to cartwheel out of the room, and we are adjourned.
Oh, that's stressful for me.